Okay, as the title said, I'm going to be talking about microbial control of insect pests of tree fruit and nuts. And we do have a few beetles in there, but it would have wrecked my subtitle if I had added them. Well, these are really ready-made components, I believe, of IPM systems. We've got several really efficacious microbial control agents. These are safe for a variety of non-target organisms, including natural enemies of the pests and other pests that we're going after, and beneficial insects such as honeybees. They're safe for orchard workers, other vertebrates, and the food supply. You can apply these things as late as, right before harvest without any problem. But the neat thing about the IPM system is that they can really be combined with other tactics, other soft tactics especially. We've got a variety of insects that can be controlled with microbials, or at least have potential to be controlled with microbials. Those with the asterisks I'm going to concentrate on today, codling moth especially, and then some of David's, here we go, down here. These are David's critters and the peach tree borer. Well, codling moth is my number one target, and it's probably the pest of global proportions when it comes to palm fruit. In the Pacific Northwest, this is the one that we're really in need of controlling. And we're going to be looking at two stages for microbial control, from the time that neonates start eating their way out of the egg till the time of entry, and then the overwintering cocooned larvae. And this one I especially like because it is after the last apple is harvested. This one becomes a captive audience. If you can control 100% of this, you'll have zero problems next spring. In reality, you know, we've gone up to 80% control. Well, the microbial control products that's most in use is the granulovirus of codling moth, and it's so called because of the each individual viral rod is enclosed in a protein granule, and this is apparently they're happily enclosed. If you expose older larvae, you literally have virus factories, and this is how it's produced. Larvae, fat body becomes the predominant site of infection. Ultimately, the larvae break down, and then you separate them from the media and formulate, and next thing you have product. The first instar is the one that you're targeting in the orchard. They usually die as first instars under the skin of the apple. And today, since its discovery back in 1964, during a picnic stop in Mexico, this was has come to fruition, being produced in Western Europe and North America in several different products. All of them are quite efficacious. This is probably the type species, as it were, for the granuloviruses. It is one of the fastest acting. It can kill in as few as 3 days, and when you want to kill larvae that are entering your apples, you want to kill them as soon as possible. This LD50 right here, it may seem surprising, but 1 to 5 granules per larva as first instars is enough to kill 50% of the population. They may not say, a lot of conventional growers may not say, we're getting the control that we need because you have these shallow stings, these entries just under the skin. Organic producers look at it a little more liberally, especially for production apples, applesauce, sliced apples, and the like. But it does provide ultimately good population control, whether you're a conventional grower or an organic grower. And as I mentioned earlier about these products in general, they're safe to applicators. There's no reentry problems, there's no pre-harvest interval problems. But they do produce these shallow stings I spoke of, and then there is short persistence, requiring frequent reapplication. We can have these, right? Yeah. There's only two up here, but excuse me. Our research at the Yakima Agricultural Research Lab focused on a variety of subjects. We started out with small tree plots here. Stephen Arthur's my postdoc, and eventually went up to full orchard applications. So we were looking at persistence, and we did find that we had a persistence time, NLT50, of 3 days. But depending on the weather, cloud cover, and the like, it can go on out to 14 days, especially in protected parts of the apple, like the calyx, where a lot of larvae do make entrance. And our optimal spray interval and dosage was found to be 3 ounces of product per acre, and a spray interval anywhere between 7 and 14 days, depending on your population pressure. By alternating with other soft chemicals, such as spinosad, this Entrust is the organic equivalent, organic formulation, we found that we got very good control. If you apply Entrust earlier in the season, it's a little softer on the non-targets. It does have some effect on parasitoids, and the CPGV, the granulovirus, does not. We looked at a variety of adjuvants for UV protection and found that encapsulation and lignin did provide significant protection. But we didn't have such great luck with feeding stimulants. You know, you'd think that if these things pause to feed on the leaves on the way, which they do if they can't find the fruit right away, especially earlier in the season when females lay their eggs further from the apples, we thought we could perhaps kick up the activity a bit, and it didn't happen. Last but not least, this pear ester was first reported by the Italians to be the best thing since sliced panini for enhancing the control of the virus by causing larvae to be disoriented by having adults lay their eggs further from apples. Fortunately, we didn't really see a significant amount of that. So if you want to optimize codling moth control, especially with the virus, you combine it with other mating disruption, spinosad, and the like. And I'll talk a bit about the nematodes in a bit. But the real fly in the ointment, the moth in the ointment, as it were, are high levels of resistance to the codling moth virus in Western Europe, especially France and Germany, where thousands of folds resistance have been reported. Now, these are orchards that have been exclusively treated with the virus for 20 years or longer. And unfortunately, this thing is dominant and it's sex-linked, so it builds up really quite rapidly. Reports have recently been, now we have reports from Switzerland and Italy. So very much like optimizing control with granulovirus as part of IPM, the same kind of things are used to forestall or eliminate resistance. And those are alternating against different generations with the virus, alternating with some other soft means of control, and really good orchard sanitation to get those infested apples out of there that are on the ground. The next group that I'll talk about in terms of virus are the leaf rollers, and these can be a significant pest, especially the oblique-banded leaf roller. The thing that stood out for us with the Pandemus leaf roller is that this is it's only a pest in cycles. And why is that? I believe because of natural infection with virus. So normally what most organic orchardists would use is Bacillus thuringiensis. These are foliar feeders, unless the retreat is plastered against the apples, and as you saw, this could result in scalloping of the surface of the apple, making that literally unmarkable. This retreat that is just a leaf, though, that has special consequences when it comes to the virus, because neonate larvae seek out old retreats, and if there's a dead older larva in it, it's really a good source of inoculum. So I'll talk more about this naturally occurring Pandemus virus. Although there is a commercial product in Europe that's used against Adoxyphes, unlike the codling moth virus, this is slow acting. So if you don't have a high dosage of virus in the larvae, you can end up with fourth and fifth instars, but full of virus, very slow acting. Like the codling moth virus, this is this is uninfected fat body, you know, that nice clarity, that lipid that you see in the cells. And these are cells that are stained with a DNA stain, an azan stain, that had just sucked up the the stain, because these are all infected with the collie moth virus. Pandemus virus. Here's a healthy one, and these the frass does have significance here. And here's a fully infected fourth instar. Well, as you can see, the time may take up to 3 weeks if you have a really low dosage. And this is against neonate larvae that ended up growing to be much older. The higher the dosage, the faster acting the material. But what's kind of neat, even though some of those that are not as infected and produce this longer term infection, they'll start eating a whole lot less as time goes on, and it's dosage dependent. The next group I'd like to talk about, entomopathogenic nematodes, serve as both parasites and pathogens. There is a symbiotic bacterium that these infective stages have that they liberate once they get inside the host, and it really is the pathogenic stage. The worm essentially serves as the guided missile, and the bacteria more like the warhead. Once it gets into the host, kills it rapidly and does a lot of other neat stuff that I'm sure Norm Leffler is going to explain in his talk with more time about one of the nematodes. Well, these things are especially good against larvae in soil habitats and then in cryptic habitats. And you can find codling moth, brown apple moth under leaf litter just above the soil, and then in these cryptic habitats under bark, bin piles and the like. You can also get good control with these nematodes. And as I mentioned, this is our target. These things are, they won't pupate until the next spring, so they stay larvae right through like an Indian summer where you've got really good temperatures in late September, early October for their control. And they do represent 100% of the population. We found that against codling moth, that if you had these new smooth bark trees and high density planting, that you could get good control, because there's not a lot of pupation sites up on the tree, and they are down here in the leaf litter. Well, this is some of the caveats about using the nematode. You really have to make sure that the temperature is above their threshold for activity, anywhere between 15 and 25 degrees centigrade. You also have to modify your spray equipment, and I'd like to thank Rob Fritz in the audience for being my principal equipment modifier as we were doing this. You have to keep it below 100 PSI, use large nozzles, take the screens and swirl plates out. And by the time we got done with all this, I think we could have sprayed an earthworm through it. So these have to be sprayed out at high volume water. And you notice that other slide I had on codling moth virus, where it really blasted it out in very small droplets. These are coming out in quite large droplets and very high volume. This is Steve Arthurs, my postdoc, demonstrating the effects on non-targets. And these are old pear trees. They have a really nice habitat as opposed to those older apple trees that are hard to keep wet. These have a really corky type of bark, and you can keep it wet for quite a while. Nematodes, of course, need the moisture in which to be active. If they don't, they start to resemble lint after a small period of time. Another thing that helped us maintain this moisture was looking at mulch and modified irrigation to keep the habitat moist. We also looked at formulation with humectants to keep things moist, foam formulation that we just started working with. Thank you, Eric. And then we are also looking at wetting agents to penetrate the habitat quite quickly. A very unlikely habitat that you might think of are these fruit bins. And these things kind of act like boxcars going from one major packer, from one orchard, highly infested, let's say, through the packer, and then sent out maybe to a really clean orchard. These can become infested with the codling moth larvae that are in those cocoons. They go right through cold storage. They can be sent to another orchard and come out really doing quite a bit of damage late in the season, which is not a good thing to do. But we found that if you immerse these in a nematode suspension at the time that you're floating the apples out, you can get very good control as long as the bin stays moist. So those limiting factors are temperature. Steinernema carpocapsi is best, 20 to 25. And feltii can go down, it's quite active at 15, and it can be active down at 10. And moisture, of course, you have to maintain this moisture, or they will dry up. If it's maintained from 8 to 24 hours, you can get good control with that. You could even get good control with Feltii because it is somewhat of a seeker and will find the host a little faster. On to David's research, we're looking at Plum curculio, and this critter has larvae that are soil dwelling. And if he's looking at, was that a 2-minute warning? Holy, I gotta go really fast now. This is Steinernema feltii, Steinernema rio bravi, and this is a imidacloprid. And you can see that Steinernema rio bravi really gives a lot better control, 100% control in this particular case. So what David's asking is, what David's saying is that they're highly efficacious and a problem in some regions. Some of the solutions to some of the problems are these external sources where they may develop a wild plum, for example, and then which could also be treated, but that could be very expensive, and then to set up trap crops. Peach tree borer is a super pest of peaches. You can kill small trees with it, and David was looking at nematodes for control of these and found that if you apply Steinernema carpocapsi, you can get a lot better control than rio bravi, which is quite interesting because rio bravi seems to be a better seeker. Looking at the borer, if you're doing preventative treatments, that you could use carpocapsi just as efficaciously as you can with chlorpyrifos. I'm sorry, David, I got to skip through these rather quickly or I'm going to get the hook. Okay, so we're going to go to his last pest, and that's the pecan weevil. And he's finding that fungi are quite active against this host. And then he found that the bands on tree trunks and applications on tree trunks give overall the best mortality. And I got in right under the wire, right? They provide 80% mortality. I'm still allowed to go on? Okay, and they're the most promising. Treatments appear to be applications of Bovaria bassiana, and then we're getting a nice commercial product of Metarhizium coming along that will also be as active. He's looking at the next step as being large-scale applications, and with that, I'll take some answers if I got so many seconds. Thank you for allowing me to help. David.
Larry, you're looking at the coddling moth. Looking at mulches and things like that. I know Peter Lando in your same lab has been looking at the movement of the larvae. Have you looked at ways of trying to manipulate habitat so you get the larvae to go to a certain area where
Yeah, I think some research up at Simon Fraser showed that there is an aggregation form. I mean, it's really weird because coddling moths hate each other when they're larvae, but as they begin to spin cocoons, you tend to find them in groups. So if there's an aggregation pheromone and Pete helps to develop that, then you could apply that in spots along with your nematodes and maybe find some better activity. And if you only infect one cocooned larva in a group of six, those other five are going to get nailed.